I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
You're now listening to the California Golden Bearcast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This episode is brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online. And welcome to another episode of the Golden Bearcast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We're back. We're talking some more Pac-12 football. I'm one of your co-hosts, Rob Huang. Alongside me, as always, is Andy. Andy, how are you doing this fine evening?
Chaos, baby. Living in chaos.
And we have a very, very special guest. We've been meaning to get him on the pod for quite some time. Is Saman from Traveler Hates Thursdays, which is a USC podcast. Saman, how are you doing this evening?
Anxious. Just like anxious. So much anxiety, both for the real world stuff and the football stuff. But yeah, thank you guys for having me on. Really appreciate it. Super pumped to join you guys.
Yeah, we're super stoked to talk through some SE stuff and alongside some other Pac-12 South stuff. But before we get to that, we're recording on Thursday evening. A few hours ago, kind of, is when it was announced that the Cal Washington game this coming Saturday, depending on when you're listening to this, was canceled due to a player testing positive and an entire position group being forced to quarantine, which now is known as the defensive line. So that is the reason, because, of course, there's that minimum of player requirements for, I think you need one quarterback, a certain amount of offensive linemen, and a certain amount of defensive linemen to play a game, regardless of the other like total minimum that the Pac-12 has set. So that's the news. Andy, we've been waiting for this for a few weeks now, and you predicted that a game would be affected by COVID. Was it 2 weeks ago?
I was like, do you hear that sound in the background? That little ding, ding, ding. That means I just nailed one of my predictions.
So we're blaming Andy for this. We're 100% blaming Andy for this.
I'm on board for blaming Andy for anything.
Yes. Yes.
It's classic. This is just classic. So silly, man. Of course it happened the week before the game, and of course it was Cal.
Week of the game.
And then on top of it, they're not even gonna make it up. Cal's just gonna play 5 games. All right. So there was no backup plan for if one game got pushed. Is that my understanding? Like, there was zero.
Well, so John Wilner reported today on Twitter saying that they haven't solidified that 7th week is going to be like a cross division game. So potentially, if there's enough missed games, I guess you can use that 7th game to make it up versus, but it logistically doesn't make sense. Right. In my opinion, but
it's assuming the worst, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Andy, do you have any other thoughts on this before I ask Saman, like, what an outsider's feeling of this situation is?
Yeah, let's go to the outsider for sure.
Let's go to the outsider. Yeah. So, Saman, tell us, like, from an outsider looking in, like, are you scared to crap, okay, like that this might happen this to your team?
Of course. I'm terrified. So the whole offseason, but, you know, the offseason was a slog. For obvious reasons, but every off-season pod that we had, granted that's like 3, because, you know, nobody wants us to hear us say the same thing over and over again. Yep. But the theme was always just this contradiction of, do we want football? Yeah, but do we want football in a way that's conducive to keeping these kids and coaches in a healthy as possible way, knowing that the sport is dangerous enough. So adding this element of exposing them to a horrible virus is a terrifying thing. And the whole, you know, player compensation thing, which is, you know, lacking
greatly. So it's horrifying, but am I surprised? No, it's just like, you know, it's surprising to me that the teams in the South and the Midwest and the Plains or whatever, played as many games as they have and largely unscathed. I mean, you know, there are some teams, Baylor, for example, that was largely affected by it, or, you know, the Heisman favorite, Trevor Lawrence, obviously contracting it and being out for the indefinite future. And of course, the greatest coach in the sport, and Nick Saban getting it, but then it kind of just disappearing, which, you know, Alabama. But it's horrifying. This is not what you wanted to see. Granted, you kind of went through the details there, and I wasn't as aware of them. It makes sense that, you know, a whole position group got it or was exposed to it, so they had to shut it down. The pure football junkie could be like, well, you know, why can't they convert some linebackers to D-line or move some O-linemen to the other side of the ball? But no, it's absolutely the right thing to do. It's horrible to see. You know, everybody wants to see football. I love college football, even though it's an incredibly flawed sport, but it's terrifying. Hope everyone obviously makes it out okay. And hopefully, but now it's not even just this week that's in jeopardy for Cal, right? Because of the county guidelines that they might have to forfeit next week as well, or postpone next week.
Yeah, that's definitely in the air. I think they're trying to work through all of that stuff to see if the guys who are quarantining that aren't testing positive and do test negative through the rest of the weekend should be okay to go by Monday. And the one guy who has tested positive is definitely going to be staying away for the foreseeable future. So we still don't know who that is. Like, who that is a big determinant of like what we expect going to Arizona. We always playing in that state already is such a toss up for us anyways. And then, like, you know, if we lose one of our top defensive linemen, then God have mercy on our souls.
Oh, Arizona. Is it Arizona that you would play next week, or ASU?
ASU.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah. We always get the good one. Like, you know, we get Utah when they're good instead of Colorado, like when they're bad, and it's the opposite. Like, I hate it.
You know what's funny about the Arizona school thing? Kenny, who unfortunately couldn't join tonight, was always after pointing out they did spring football because, you know, things are different there in Arizona. So I think that'll be interesting to see if the Arizona schools themselves are kind of more prepared than everybody else because they've had a full offseason of install and that sort of perspective. But yeah, it's weird. It's super weird. It sucks. Was excited. Like the game itself was going to be really good. I'm an Irvine Newport Beach kid and Chase Garber's at quarterback, and Ethan's at Washington.
At Washington. Yeah. I don't think he's going to be the starter, but yep, that would have been a fun one.
So Washington's full out of their Jake allotment. No more Jakes.
I don't think there's any more Jakes on the roster. Yeah. Sad. Well, there is a Jacob Sermon.
Right, Peter Sermon's kid.
That's yeah.
Right.
So I don't know if that counts as a Jake.
We'll count it. Yeah,
we'll count.
We're counting right. Jacob Eason as a Jake. We'll count Sermon as a Jake.
All right. We'll call it. All right. Then there still is Jake. A Jake still survives in Washington. But yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting the next few days, at least for as a Cal fan, to see what's going to happen going into Arizona State. But yeah, Andy, you got a prediction right.
Yeah, the worst one possible. I mean, yeah. I think what Simon said was super apt, like that. When we talked about this, we made it very clear that a single positive test was an abject failure of the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
And because one positive test could lead to several more, and then we just don't know. Like, my friend was in the hospital and couldn't, like, still can't walk 50 feet without being winded. So it's like subjecting somebody to that is brutal. And so at the time, you know, it was this funny thing because it looks like, you know, we saw all the other schools they're playing, you know, it's like there's rankings going on and we're like, oh damn, the Pac-12 and the Big 10 is really missing out. Big Ten decides to come back. And we're like, oh, yeah, we're going to come back. Then look at Wisconsin. Like, Wisconsin just, yeah, it's a total disaster. And, yeah, so it's wild. And, unfortunately, you know, it was one of those predictions that I thought was bold at the time. And then I remember you, Rob, and Trace were just like, yep, mm-hmm, that's definitely going to happen. Because I also threw fires in there. So I was like, it's going to be postponed by fire, COVID, or just something entirely different. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, for sure. Without a doubt, that's happening. So maybe it's a good thing we got it out of the way at the beginning, but I doubt it. And it certainly sucks because the Niners, as you know, are also dealing with this. And
they're playing right now.
Thrashed right now. And so I was like, oh, thank goodness. I'm like really excited to look forward to Cal this weekend. But on the bright side, it's my wife's birthday. So she will be extraordinarily excited that Saturday night of her birthday weekend. For the first time in 7 years, we do not have to watch a Cal football game.
Happy birthday to your wife.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, that's...
Now you have to make sure she listens to the podcast because, you know, give her a shout out.
In fear of an earthquake happening, knock on wood, there hasn't been like a massive earthquake because I feel like that's the only thing missing on the West Coast.
Speak something into existence right now.
Like at one point last week when the Irvine fires were happening, there was like 22 fires going on in the state. It's like, what are we doing?
I think we're getting rain this weekend.
Yeah, we are getting rain.
Hope so. Hope
now we're going to get mudslides because that's how it happens.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm going to Santa Barbara where all the mudslides happen. So
it's a never-ending cycle.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Never-ending cycle.
Good luck.
Give me Georgia. You can give me all the bad in the world. Just give me Georgia and Pennsylvania. Georgia that's and fine. Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Penn State owes us something good for all the bad that they've done.
Peace up, A-Town down, baby. Peace up, A-Town down. all right, let's move on because there's a reason we brought Simon on the pod today, which is to talk about SE, our bitter rivals to the south, and to talk about his thoughts on the Pac-12 South as well. So, just for our listeners to start, I believe the USC Trojans were picked to finish first in the Pac-12 South by the media polls. They took 32 first place votes, finished at 220. In relation, Oregon took 35 with 222, their favorite to win the whole conference. And then Cal, for reference, also got 3 first place votes, 176 to finish second in the Pac-12 North. So that was the projections there. The Trojans last year finished 8-5. They scored at an average of 32.5 points per game. They gave up about 29.4, which is about 78th in the country. Their scoring was about 37th in the country. And it looks like offensively, they bring back pretty much everyone. They are the fifth most production returning team in the country, 82% overall, 77% on offense, and 87% of their production on defense. So not a lot of turnover. It looks like you guys are going to be pretty, you guys are always stocked with talent, but even more so with talent and experience. Is that a good, and also today they announced the preseason all conference selections. And I think SC had 7 players selected to the first and second team in total. So yeah. Give us your thoughts on the season and like the team, composition for this upcoming season.
Yeah, the variable is the head coach, which is
off the bat.
What a world to live in. So the big turnover spots are our offensive tackle. They have to replace both of them, so that's going to be huge. Additionally, Graham Harrell does come back, which makes me very, very happy, as I think he is. I usually hate the idea of promoting from within, but if they were to get rid of Clay and give Graham the reins, I would be happy with it just because I feel like he's one of those talents that's worth keeping around. Todd Orlando, the new defensive coordinator, formerly of the University of Texas, kind of just seemed like ran out of steam, and Herman had to do what we call Notre Dame, which is fire all of his coordinators and hire new ones to save his ass. And we'll see if that works out for Herman, but it doesn't look like it. Clay Helton effectively just did that on one side of the ball. I'll save the breakout players for a little bit later, but no, excited about Orlando, what that defense brings for us. And obviously excited about Graham Harrell. The talent's there, not this recruiting class, but the past ones. Excited to see what this little 6-game mini season has in store.
Andy, you got any questions for Suman talking about SC, like their general stuff before we dive in?
Yeah. So, I mean, just looking at Keaton Slovis, do you think it is an improvement upon last year? Is it a Sam Darnold situation where sort of like year one sort of in a way kind of felt like maybe better than the rest, or, you know, not totally, but like Jake Fromm similarly, like came on really strong as freshman and then just kind of like was good enough. But I'm curious if you see like Slovis continuing to take that next step. He's obviously in a good situation with Harrell at offensive coordinator.
Yeah. The reason that I'm optimistic about avoiding a Darnold situation is that Harrell's the offensive coordinator. I think that there's a stronger offensive identity with Harrell than there was when Sam was the quarterback, with the what is referred to on the USC message boards and internet as the gumbo offense. So it's good to have identity always within your football team, and Graham Harrell definitely has that, and the energy is definitely there. And yeah, I'm all in on Keaton. I think I didn't see that. Nobody saw this coming. I mean, Harrell. Well, I'll change that. Harrell's the only person that saw this coming. He all summer camp, or fall camp, or whatever the hell you want to call it. I prefer to call it summer camp because it happens in the summer. Last season, he was hyping Slovis up. That's why he was the backup, and he seems to be right. I'm the only thing that worries me about him is how many shots is he going to take, and is he going to be able to play all 6 games?
Well, I guess off of that, there's one question I've always wanted to ask SC fans, and I should have asked this earlier, like, you know, when you guys first hired Harrell and such, but it's very split for any fan base when you hire an offensive coordinator that's so singular in his scheme. Like, it's an air raid offense, right? Mm-hmm. And Andy and I, you know, I think both of us can attest to this. Like, when we hired Sonny, we're like, holy hell, we're going to, like, spread. We're going, like, from Tedford's playbook. We're going spread. We're modernizing. We're going to the air raid. And then, like, 2 years into it, we're like, oh, my God, can we get rid of the air raid, please? Can we run in 22 or 21 personnel, for crying out loud? Can we get a fullback and an actual tight end? Like, you know, we were getting to that point. Like, what was the fan – what was – I guess for you, like, where were you on that line? And then where are you now?
I was ready. I was ready for them to try to do something different because they'd been doing the same thing since Pete Carroll left. I mean, everything was an extension of what Pete Carroll did, whether it was Lane, whether it was Sark. Helton was on was on both Lane's and Sark's staff. So it needed some level of a change. And you look at what USC is really good at recruiting, quarterbacks and wide receivers, it makes sense. There's, you know, you're not getting what's additionally, what are they bad at? And what's really hard to get is good offensive linemen, especially seemingly now in California. It's really hard to find good offensive linemen, where a lot of them are at the South and a lot of them don't want to move because they can go to the SEC and get ready. And, you know, the evidence is there for them to go pro from there. So, why not develop a system that accentuates your strengths, especially in recruiting? And why not, you know, and they played their current head coach in the NFL was their offensive coordinator for like a month. So, you know, they stuck with it. I'm excited to see what year two holds. Year one was really, really promising. You know, the wide receiver talent is off the charts, always at SC. And Keaton Slovis, like saying, looks like the real deal.
I mean, not much you can say to that.
It'll be what they did. The concern is obviously is short yardage, which I'm sure you guys had the concern with Sonny. Sonny was fun, but his defenses were cool. That was the big problem. I mean, Goff gave us hell every single time we played him, so it's not like the offense was really the big problem. But short yardage, the short yardage is the thing where, you know, you worry a little bit about it. But the hope is that, you know, we hit 15, 20 yard plays and consecutively for touchdowns, and that's the plan.
Yeah, we end up having to think that the air raid was. At that point in time, I think
Bear Raid. It was the Bear Raid, right?
The Bear Raid was impossible to pair with any type of defense because it, you know, quote unquote, wore down your defense too much because you scored too quickly, which we've seen that whole narrative change. Is like the Air Raid has kind of branched out. It's become more nationally, like there's Air Raid concepts being used more and more across college football. But I remember for sure that feeling of just sort of being like, is this something that, do you have to suck this much at defense in order to be this good at offense? And it seems like USC sort of proved that wrong last season but at the same time, you know, Clancy was the ire of many SC fans. I think, like, I'm glad you're excited about Orlando, but I think that's the big, that's probably the question mark for me
100%
going into the season is, you know, what does the defense look like?
I mean, they're going full Big 12, right? Like, it's a it's a commitment to Big 12, and hopefully it's not Big 12 bad. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. Clancy, it seemed like the game passed Clancy by, and it just seemed like the same things. It was the same things, just changed on the opponent. It was sweeps. It was misdirection. It was every single time USC was getting killed by the same shit over and over again. And to have that performance against Iowa in the bowl game, and obviously it really kind of got out of hand once Keaton got hurt, but everyone was so tired of it.
I bet a fair amount of people on that game. I was like, SC's nice, believe me. And then
the great equalizer of Clancy Pendergast and Clay Helton.
I mean, we had Clancy too for a while, so we have
legit.
He was
good.
That's when
he was holding Oregon to like 10 points.
Yeah,
Chip Kelly, Oregon.
Yeah, that was Chip Kelly, Oregon. Man, oh, time flies.
And that was what Michael Hendricks or one of the Hendricks, Eric, one of the Hendricks brothers was on that team.
Kendricks, yeah,
Michael Kendricks, yeah. Well, let's dive a little bit deeper. Let's go into the schedule. You guys play ASU, the first 9 a.m. game of Pac-12 history on this weekend, November 7th. You guys host ASU.
Then you guys activated.
Then you guys travel to the desert. You guys take on Arizona on the 14th. Then you guys travel to the mountains and take on Utah on the 21st. Then host Colorado. Then host Washington State as your cross-division game. And then the big LA rivalry, you guys play at UCLA to close out the year. Tell me about the schedule. Do you like it? Are there any games that you're worried about? Just run me through it.
Yeah, I honestly, and this is, you're going to roll your eyes like, oh, arrogant USC fan here, but this is this is the best draw that USC could get from schedule-wise. To get Wazoo out of the north, yep. To get ASU at home, I think that's super helpful. The one that scares the living hell out of me, because we haven't won in Utah since 2012, is the Utah game. That's the big one that scares me. I'll save my further arrogance for later on. But it shapes up nicely. It shapes up nicely for USC. The Carl Durrell reappearance is still a wild storyline to me, but yeah, it should be a good six games for USC for sure.
It's hard to look at the schedule and not have confidence with it, really. it's pretty friendly,
because even with the scary games, ASU and Utah, there's a lot of turnover there. Granted, they're Utah's player development is unmatched with anyone really in the conference, so that you have to take that into account. Britton Covey, the ageless or seemingly endless years of eligibility for that guy. I think he's like 35 now.
Yeah, he has two grandkids.
Yeah. He's still there. Their tight end is nasty, Keithy. But, you know, they change quarterbacks. They change their pass rush, I think, is all brand new. They lose the superheroes that they had on that side of the ball. A lot of defensive back overturn. And then, obviously, they lose Zach Moss also. So that'll be interesting to see. I think their quarterback is the transfer from South Carolina. His name is escaping me currently. But
yes. Yeah, because Shelley's now at, I think, Utah State.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah. I mean, it's tough. Like, you look at the preseason, like, and what the media picked, and it's like SC, then Arizona State, then Utah, then UCLA, Colorado, Arizona. You play against four teams, because Washington State's picked to finish dead last in the Pac-12 North. So you're playing four teams out of your six that are predicted to finish in the bottom half of their respective divisions, right? So you should be heavily favored going into at least four of those games. I mean, granted, UCLA is kind of, you know, it's always a rivalry games are always like somewhat weird. But I mean, I don't think you guys should be close in that game at all. So yeah, I mean, ASU and Utah, as you said, like are the two big ones, that if you can get ASU out of the way early, which you do in week one, then it should be somewhat of a cruise to the finish line.
Should is the imperative word.
But it's 2020 in college football, so.
Yeah, and it's USC football, so.
It's so funny, like, the doubt that has crept into the mindset, because it didn't always used to be there.
And no. What's so funny, too, about USC football history is that USC football fans think that they're this perennial power. And they are a perennial recruiting power, for sure, as long as the, you know, the recruiting services have existed, and I'm sure previous to that. But you look at the history, there's like large gaps between periods of competence and excelling. There's, you know, 25, 30 year gaps between consistent bowl runs and or championship runs. So it's the great overconfidence that is the USC fan base, and great self-evaluation is pretty remarkable. I don't think this is not one of those 30. We're not in that new 30-year stretch or the new end of a 30-year stretch or whatever, 25-year stretch, whatever it is. I think technically 18, 16, 15, whatever, mid-2000s. So we're, as long as Clay Helton's here, I don't think we're winning a national title anytime soon.
I mean, so let's talk about Clay Helton for a little bit. That was going to be one of my questions. I mean, we talked about him early, and I was like, I'm surprised you brought him up this early, because, you know, we're going to have to talk about him at some point. But, you know, I think, is it a right gauge to say that he's somewhat on the hot seat? And if he is, like, what has to, like, happen for him to be fired? Do you foresee him even getting fired, even if he goes 0-6 this season, just because it is that shortened, weird season?
So the only thing that gives you any indication that it will happen is that there's a new athletic director, right? So there's that. But the other variable is schools are bleeding money right now. And, you know, even though USC has its super large endowment, are they going to want to withdraw from that endowment and spend that on paying off a coach, this contract? The answer is probably not. I think, barring anything insane like an 0-6 season, Clay Helton's probably coming back again. And I don't know. To me, at this point, I'll believe it when I see it, because I, you know, we've been asking for him to get fired on our show for what feels like 2 years, at least two, maybe three. But it just, I can't say without any confidence that he will get fired. And what sucks about Clay is that he seems like just like a generally decent human, and you always root for like decent humans, but he shouldn't have ever been given the job in the first place. And that's proven. He had a Well, I don't, maybe Sam Darnold's not a generational quarterback anymore, but at the college level, he was definitely an elite quarterback. You know, I still have belief in him and think that the Jets situation is probably as bad as you could get on a professional level. But well, yeah, Clay Helton is the biggest question mark in college football.
Andy, you got anything for Saman about the schedule or Coach Helton?
No,
that was great.
Yeah, I mean, you think about what Clay, the bad stuff Clay has done outside of, and you know, he didn't directly do this, but the bad things that have happened by proxy of Clay being still here is Oregon is plucking out kids out of the Los Angeles area left and right. Whether it was Thibodeau, then this past year it was Flo. You know, at Foreman is another kid that's out of LA, five-star defensive lineman that's either going to go to, you know, SC fans are hoping, but he's probably going to go elsewhere. And I think that's big Clay Helton's biggest failure in this past recruiting class. Also, granted, they're rebounding a little bit here this year for sure, but the Clay Helton effect is largely been negative the last two seasons.
It's hilarious for me to like hear that, just because Andy, you and I, what did we rave about when, or what were we always angry about when Sonny was here? So he could not recruit in the Bay Area for his life. Mm-hmm. And then when Wilcox came in, the first thing he did is, as soon as his press conference is over, heads to some of the local schools like out in like Pittsburgh and, you know, the Eastern Bay Area, right?
Yeah.
And then to hear like an SC fan going like, we can't recruit the LA area with Helton, it's like, oh man. The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. That is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Like the writing definitely has to be at the wall at that point. If you're not even in the running for a lot of these top five, like, or five-star guys that live in that area.
Yeah. I mean, last year, this past recruiting class was the worst in the history of the recruiting website era for USC. And that includes, I think, pre-P. Carroll, they started having the site. So, you know, it's the Paul Hackett era. Even Paul Hackett recruited pretty well. But it sounds like this offseason, not only the Todd Orlando signing, but two assistant coaches in Dante Williams, who they nabbed from Oregon, and then also Craig Nivart, who is an Orlando buddy, are two really aggressive recruiters, which they needed on that side of the ball. But if they go 3 years in a row of losing the number one defensive player in the state, and, you know, top 30 defensive player in the country, overall players, really. That's really, really not good.
Well, since we're talking about players, let's get into the players here. Let's talk about key players that you think are going to be a big role for the Trojans this year. Let's start with the offense. Who you got for us?
Keaton Slovis, obviously. All the wide receivers, Amon-Ra, Tyler Vaughns, Drake London. The big breakout guy there to watch is Brew McCoy, who's recovered from his season long illness that he had last year. Drake London is a wonderful player because he's also a really good basketball player and just like one of those like, how are you that good as an athlete? That's frightening. But the key to if any of this works is the offensive line. And the big move there is Elijah Vera Tucker kicking out from guard to tackle, which not an easy transition by any means. He was an all conference guard, one of the top graded guards in the country by PFF. So we'll see if he can make that switch to tackle. But the offense should put up points and should be a top 15, top 20 S&P plus offense, hopefully by the end of the six games.
Do you expect him to move? I'm not aware. I'm not that good with the lineup at SC. Is he moving to left or right tackle?
Left tackle. So yeah, they're really, yeah, he was, he played mostly left guard, so keeping on left sideline. They're kicking him to Keaton's blind side. So,
that's huge.
Yeah. So again, as I was mentioning, offensive line recruiting hasn't been that great. So, the center they really like, and Justin Dietich and Brett Nealon, those are the two centers. Dietich might play a little bit of guard. That's how thin things are, so to speak. But, losing the right tackle last year in a former Tennessee player, whose name is escaping me, that's how memorable his performance was. But it'll be interesting to see how the offensive line gels. And they seem to have some confidence around it. They recruited a lot of projects, a lot of three-star guys, but a lot of Texas guys. They seem to be diving into Texas now for offensive linemen, even if they're a little bit more more projects. But in terms of, they're recruiting kids that are already like 6'7", 300 pounds.
Oh, boy.
So we'll see how that works.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so there are some confidence. Houghton seemed pretty optimistic that a couple of them could contribute if needed. Hopefully that's not the case. You'd never want freshmen playing on the offensive line, but if needed, it seems like Houghton has some faith there.
Andy, you got anything to ask?
I think Brew McCoy was my big, that's the one I've heard a lot about. Mm-hmm. So I'm scared about that. But who's your pick at running back? Because it's crowded and generally upper class field, I feel like.
Yep. So we got Vi Malapai coming back, Stephen Carr, who finally might be healthy. That's the big question with him, right? So the talent's there with him.
He's been there for 8 years, right?
this is his fourth. But yeah, he's always been a little dinged up. So we'll see what happens with if the Carr gets started there. And then Vi is trusty, but he's not very explosive. He does the job, which might be all you need for the running back in this offense. Kristen is the fun one. He's the track and field guy, the burner that can take any run to the house. But he was playing last season at 175 pounds, so he had 10 pounds bulked up a little bit. That's still not a lot for a running back, but that's the problem. Running back depth isn't great, and they didn't really add a lot to the backfield this past cycle. So, yeah, that's definitely a big question.
Yeah, we know how much Sonny loved the small, speedy back. That was his favorite, or like backslash wide receiver, like someone that you could put out in the slot, and just loved it and like swore that it was the key to our success. It didn't end up being that way.
Yeah. We'll see. So the other running back I nearly neglected to mention was Marquis Stepp. He's the big 225 pound, 230 pound guy that can help in the short yardage game. Really showed out against Notre Dame. from Indiana. But he didn't end up getting hurt. You know, running backs get hurt. And the only problem is that after those four, there isn't a lot of depth there. It's mostly walk-ons behind those guys. And all the three of the four of those guys have had injury trouble, and or one was too small. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I remember Andy and I, when we went down to the field for the SC game a couple years ago, we saw Stephen Carr as a freshman, and we like walked by him. And Andy, you remember this? We were like, holy crap, that dude's like built to be a running back. Yeah. And we were like, he's going to terrify us for the next 4 years. And then it never happened.
But he's still around.
But he's still around. So it still could happen. It's still in the realm of possibility. But yeah, that brought me back as soon as you mentioned his name. But let's move on. Talk about the defense. Tell us about your key players you think is going to be big on the defensive side.
Yeah, so Jay Tufele opted out, one of our best players on the defense. So that's a big. His sister is going through, has been dealing with coronavirus. She was hospitalized for a long time. He essentially dropped out or opted out so that he could raise a GoFundMe for her, which is shows you how depressing college football really is at times. But so he's focusing on his pro career. The real hype this season on the defensive side is around Palie Naoteote, the middle linebacker. I'm skeptical because he just hasn't been very good, and maybe I'm being harsh, but he's either been dinged up or he finds his way out of position a lot. And as a middle linebacker, that could be really, really detrimental. I've always felt like he's miscast as a middle linebacker and should maybe be an edge rusher, but that's who Orlando and Helton and everyone is hyping up, saying has grown a lot this offseason. We'll see. If he's right and he's actually as good as advertised, then this defense could be really, really good. The defensive backfield is really good. Whether it's Elijah Griffin or Isaac Taylor Stewart or Chris Steele, all three of those boundary corners. And then the nickel, Craig Johnson, was a little inconsistent last season, but felt like he got better as the season went on. The safeties, Isaiah Polamau and Talanoa Funga are all world, but I feel like I keep saying, but they've had some injury issues also. So, there weren't a lot of games that they played together last season. So, if those guys can, the talent's there, it's a matter of health and if the scheme is right. I think the scheme is right. The one freshman, I almost forgot Drake Jackson. So they're moving Drake Jackson from a hand on the ground defensive end to a stand up outside linebacker. He dropped about 30 pounds.
Man.
Yeah. So, that's kind of the big thing that everyone's going to watch. I don't know if you guys remember this, but his highlight from the Spree game when he was a freshman was him, picking off, I believe now Boise State quarterback Jack Sears and taking it to the house. So the athleticism is there for him. Whether he can play, those kind of weight swings are always hard for guys to adjust to, whether he can play at that weight and still be an effective pass rusher should be interesting to see. But athleticism is there, talent's there. The one fresh true freshman that they're really hyping up is Marlon Tupelotu's brother, Tuli Tupelotu, and they're saying he could get some snaps as a freshman and contribute right away. So should be interesting defense, big question mark, hoping the scheme and coordinator change from Clancy to Todd Orlando works. Hoping Orlando also is the linebackers coach, new defensive line coach in Vic Soto. They pulled him from the East Coast from Virginia. Other world recruiter and defensive back coach Dante Williams, and then Craig Nivar. So they're hoping all those guys, brand new defensive staff essentially, bears fruit for USC in general, and then really puts this talent together. But we'll see. That's the big question mark. They're, no spring practice. They've had, 4 weeks or whatever everyone's been doing. Obviously, they've been doing virtual install like this. But that's way different than being on the field.
Absolutely. Andy, you got anything on this?
Spoiling our next one, but I'm curious, unit that you have all the confidence in the world in defensively, and then one that you're like, I don't know. Wait to see.
I trust the defensive backs, especially given the coach combination and the talent that's there. You have 3 5-star guys on the boundaries. Greg Johnson was a 4-star at corner, and then the safeties. Collectively, you know, that's the unit. If they play well, so goes the defense, in my view. And there's no reason for them not to. Steele has already showed a lot as a true freshman. You know, none of these guys really have that Jack Jones-ish vibe where they're, you know, celebrating QB missed throws. They all seem really in there and good competitors and great mindsets. That to me is the strength. The weakness or the big question mark is defensive line. It's, you know, Tupelotu and Brandon Peely, you're going to have to carry a lot. Outside of them, it's kind of young and a lot of guys that have kind of been shuffled between some roles, and Connor Murphy, a JUCO guy that has struggled to find some playing time, and Caleb Tremblay. So that defensive line is the big question marks for SC are the lines, and that's not necessarily a place you want to have question marks.
Yeah. Well, since Andy asked about the defense, let's ask that same question, but on the offense. Like, do you have any breakout players or places that you're worried about?
Breakout players. I mean, I can't say Keaton because he broke out. I think Drake London's going to really go off. Early on, Keaton trusted him in big spots and third downs in the red zone. He was the guy that he was kind of looking forward to. I mean, obviously, Amon-Ra is a talent, and so is Tyler Vaughns. But I think Drake London's probably going to take another step. They're going to try to cycle some guys. So, you know, you'll see some Brew McCoy in there. Those are kind of the breakout guys to me. And, you know, if Stephen Carr can be healthy, the talent's there. Just health is his biggest problem.
You have any spots on the offense that you're worried about?
Offensive line. Mm-hmm. Sure. Outside of Elijah Vera Tucker, and even including Elijah Vera Tucker in the sense that he's moving to left tackle. That's a huge, huge question mark. But, you know, I think what's the really interesting thing for me to watch around the offensive line is Tim Trevno. You know, offensive coordinator at Michigan, you know, run first, pro stylish kind of a guy all the way through his career, but has kind of adapted to the air raid mindset and seems to be really embracing the change and welcoming it and trying to adapt not only his style to it, but his coaching to it. And the raves in the off season, if you go on sites like uscfootball.com or Marina Troy's, that the players are really taking to it and are really appreciating that, you know, his value as a coach and as a leader. So if Drevno and can get that group going right with Graham, hopefully scheming properly around what he might have questions around, I think should be a really big year for the offense.
So if everything goes well, what happens?
6-0, convincing win in every game.
Okay.
At least double-digit wins in every game. That's if it goes well.
And so based on what you've told us, the offense carries you there. The line, the offensive line maybe doesn't get hurt and plays well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're scoring 35, 40 points a game and allowing, you know, just 10 points less than that. it's okay if you're allowing 30 points, you know, 35 points, but if you're putting up 40, 45, which there's really no reason for this office not to, at least from a skill position standpoint. That's a really good, really good season. And yeah, and then you gotta win every game. There's for football reasons, there's no excuse to not win every game.
And then if the season explodes,
you lose week one to ASU, and you lose week three to Utah, and then you kind of just limp to the rest of the games. That's it.
Yeah.
You lose those two games, nothing really matters. Sure, beating a really bad Arizona team with a potential lame duck coach, beating a bad Colorado team with a brand new head coach, beating a probably bad Wazoo team with a new but fun head coach, and then beating whatever the hell's going on in Westwood with Chip. Like, that's not really inspiring. So yeah, that's kind of, if it goes bad, you lose two games. It's disaster if you lose anything, really, more than I could stomach and understand the Utah loss if it's like a close game and, you know, fluky weird shit happens. But if there's any sort of like the offense doesn't show or the defense doesn't show, like the ASU game, we'll talk about this a little bit later. But yeah, those are my things don't go well.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the question we had in mind and the answers we had in mind. So let's move to the bigger picture. Let's talk about the South. Give me a surprise team or a dark horse team you think might win the South.
I mean, in my view, it should be nobody else.
if we had you hostage and we forced you to answer it,
the dark horse is ASU, right? So the full Herm Edwards experience. They have the quarterback. The quarterback's there. They're replacing literally everything else. So that's the hard part. It's really hard to put all your money on just one dude. But if the one dude you're going to put it on is Jaden Daniels, then that's not a bad dude to put it on. I just, the surprise team. I mean, Arizona probably gets a little bit better, but I don't know how much. That's the thing. Like, there shouldn't be outside, you know, and Utah's Utah, right? Like, you can't, they're so, such a well-oiled machine at this point. They developed, they're all.
You have Utah. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. So Utah's set, they're not going to fire their coach.
No.
But who is the.
He just got an extension, three years?
Yeah, he did get another extension.
So. Yeah,
he's there forever. They're already making his monument there. Yeah. Like, haven't you heard? They're building it up right now outside the stadium, outside of Rice Eccles.
Who loses their job at the end of the season? Because there's one brand new coach. So can't be Colorado. Maybe it will be, but couldn't. You know, we're going to say that's probably not going to happen.
It's another Mel Tucker situation, Colorado. How sucky would that be for Colorado fans if they had another Mel Tucker situation on their hands, back to back years?
Yeah, that's like, brutal.
So who is it that...
Who gets fired?
Yeah.
In all honesty, probably nobody, given the environment. But, you know, if we're saying, you know, current environment doesn't exist and it's a normal year, it's got to be Clay, right? Like, if he underperforms, it's got to be Clay. I don't think a public school is paying Chip's contract buyout. I don't think that's happening.
I'm surprised.
I'm shocked. Yeah,
I would. You think they're fired? You think Clay will get? I mean, Chip will get fired.
I mean, he has to be the coach that's the seat is the hottest. I would think, right? No.
I mean, the question for me would be the way I would phrase the question is: if all teams go 0-6, like let's say Arizona, UCLA, and SC both go 0-6, who is the first person that's getting fired off the tarmac? Like, who's getting that termination notice first?
No, college, I think football, it's
world is, you're welcome for that verb. It's got to be Clay.
Yeah, it's the only school that can do it on the tarmac. They've done it before. There's precedent there.
Experience. Yeah, it's got to be Clay. I don't think UCLA is ready to fire Chip. I really don't. I don't know why, but I can't see anything other than Clay getting fired in terms of the South if it goes poorly. I don't know. How many years does Sublin have left? I could see Sublin getting fired. They still not see them. I could there's see them nothing there. There's literally, if you guys think Chip is bad, Sublin's worse. Right? Does he show for it?
Legitimately. No, I think that he'd be my number two. I put Clay number three. But after talking to you tonight, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe
SC probably has the most money to be able to do it right away. Right. I was talking to another buddy of mine. He's like, in all of college football, like right now, who has the hottest seat? And it's probably Tom Herman. Texas is probably the only school amidst a pandemic
that would
with
do
no
it.
Fans that probably would do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they would do it. The football obsession in that state, I think,
mm-hmm.
I think bears weight on that most probably happening. And then like, you know, USC fans fancy themselves as football obsessed. But it's like, guys, come on. Like, nobody, you know, even in football obsessed states, 8-5 teams sell out every game. We're not that. You know, there's better shit to do in LA when there's a mediocre product.
We say the same thing about Cal.
Yeah.
We say the exact same thing about Cal.
So
that's the issue. I mean, I think it's the issue that all of these sports teams were facing. You know, the Giants were seeing declining attendance numbers. That's the Warriors were not. and then the Sharks, I think, have been pretty stable, but were terrible last year. So, I mean, before pre-COVID, I think that it's the thing with the Bay Area is like you not only just. That's the thing. When I was in Chicago, I would just watch football Saturday and Sunday all day. Yeah. And you're out here and it's like, dude, there's like life to be had. And then we're in the Midwest. It's like, well, I'm inside and it's freezing. Yeah. So what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
Your face literally hurts when you walk outside.
Yes. I like text Andy on game day. I'm like, hey, where are you at? I'm heading to the stadium. He's like, oh, I'm on a hike. I was like, it's like 2 hours from 2 hours from game time and we have to be in the press box and you're on a hike right now? He's like, yeah, I'll make it on time. And like right as like we're standing up for the national anthem, Andy comes like rushing in and setting his backpack down, sitting down next to me. He's like, I told you I'd make it on time. I was like, by literally the skin of your teeth, but okay, yeah, you do have a point. You did make it on time before kickoff. So there's too much stuff to do here, man.
No, there's it's like, and especially, you know, like you said, in the Bay Area and in Southern California, you could either be spending $200-$300 on an afternoon, or you could be like on a hike, or you could be hanging out with, if you've got a dog, hanging out with your dog somewhere, or just like watching from home or sitting outside. There's lots of other things you'd be doing.
Absolutely. I have one final question that I've been asking all our preview guests before we close, unless Andy, you have anything else you want to ask someone about SC?
Mm-mm.
Or the big picture? Nope. All right. Well, here's my final question to you. I've been asking all the guys and gals that we've interviewed. It's 2020, the year of uncertainty and insanity. If there's one prediction that you can make about the Pac-12 that is so out there you don't think will happen, but because it's 2020, you know, right, anything can happen. So give me one of your just outlandish predictions. If you want, for an example – The Quack 12 guys who do the Oregon podcast, they said that Oregon State and Colorado will finish third in their respective divisions. Like that was the like their way out there thing.
I'm looking at the divisions and I don't know how you get to Oregon State and Colorado. This feels like a cheap answer, but Keaton Slovis wins the Heisman Trophy. I mean, if he blitzes through those six games and Mac Jones gets COVID and Trevor Lawrence gets COVID, I mean, who else is there, right? Like, outside of those two guys, it's kind of...
Probably need Travis Etienne to get COVID too.
Yeah, probably. But, you know, they don't give Heisman Trophies to running backs anymore. but, you know, that's my out there. Keaton Slovis winning the Heisman. It's a super long shot because, you know, the general opinion of the Pac-12 is so low right now. But I guess if you want a further long shot than that is Jane Daniels wins the Heisman. If he goes off, I mean, it's like he runs for, you know, 100 yards a game and throws for 200-300 yards a game. He has the talent to do it. And, we'll see. But
yeah, I mean, he lost his 1,000-yard rusher behind him and his 1,000-yard pass catcher in front of him.
Dude, he's
gonna he does both. Maybe he does both.
Yeah.
Maybe he runs for 1,000. And, yeah, exactly.
Full Mike Vick and Madden.
Exactly. Madden, was that Madden 04?
Yeah.
It was a cheat code Madden with Michael Vick? Yeah. Well, if you don't have anything else, Andy, I think that's a wrap.
Yes.
Can I ask you guys some questions about Cal since we're not going to play each other this year?
Sure. This is the first time in I don't know how many ever years that we're not playing any of the LA schools.
Yeah.
It kind of bugged me out.
Yeah. Obviously, COVID cancellation game aside, do you like that second place prediction?
Andy, you want to take it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Cal has as good a shot as anyone to win the Pac-12 North this year. I think second seems reasonable. You know, to be in line with 2020, this was shaping up to be one of the most loaded Cal teams in the last decade. And we've lost over half of that season and opportunity now. So I think, like, to me, I do like it. I mean, we're still Cal, so like to put anything above second would be just like pretty outlandish. But, you know, I think that it was one of those things, and looking at the schedule, it's a hard schedule. I think Oregon State will be better. I've said that like repeatedly. I just expect them to kind of improve this year. And then, you know, I think Washington State is like full rebuild. Like the North is the game against Washington was kind of a big test. And so it's losing that though is wild. So now I have no idea, but I could see Cal as easily kind of going 5-0 as they could 3-3 or something. 2-3, 3-2, whatever it is now, you know.
I think the North is up for grabs a little bit more than people think it is. You know, I think the Ducks, a lot of turnover there along the offensive line and at quarterback. Cristobal's got a little Clay Helton in him, not in a good way. Kind of turtles up in weird moments. I'll never forget the game that he should have just kneeled it down, but he ran the ball and lost the game to Stanford. Granted he's recruited his ass off, but I don't know what Stanford's going to be.
No one knows.
Yeah. It's David Shaw, but it's also Davis Mills. Is he good? Is he not?
I don't think anyone also cares. So
general lack of disinterest.
Yeah.
I was super excited to watch Cal this year. I thought, you know, there's been a Justin Wilcox rebirth amongst, not all USC fans. A lot of people still hate him, but amongst smarter football fans.
I also don't think you're the only fan base. I think Washington and Boise State and
he was good at Washington.
I don't know. Some Washington fans still are like good riddance. Like I hope he loses the game. Like
I think that's the Sark taint.
Might be. It actually might be.
But
it's by association.
I mean the GIF all time. Him looking like a total creep.
I think we do have another one of those. We have a refreshed. We have a refreshed version. Yeah. Just not as creepy, but nice. There is a refreshed version.
Yeah. So
with appropriate gear on.
There was a time last year that, unironically, people were like Justin Wilcox, maybe to replace Clay. But then things kind of turned south a little bit. But
I think that's like you guys. Have people that said that? I mean, I know Oregon came calling, but he politely declined.
Yeah.
So I personally don't think he's leaving here anytime soon. I think he's perfectly happy here.
He should. There's some guys in situations that you're like, why would you leave it? Like there's, you know,
yeah.
If you go in private Cal, it's not a bad thing.
No, right. Cause I think
no offense, Wilcox, but, like, that's not a bad
exactly.
Thing.
Exactly.
I mean, it's bad to us.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
You're not going to lose your job. That's the difference.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like,
yeah.
It will give you the extra year to be like, it was just a bad year. I mean,
if you're making bowls and like threatening for conference titles, I think that's a good job to be like, unless you get Aaron Rodgers again and Marshawn Lynch on the same team.
And Deshaun. Yeah.
It was fun. Yep. It starts with making a bowl every year, and that's what they've set out and basically nearly done. Yep. And then getting our first bowl win. Yeah, there's just like a ton of positive momentum with the program. We're recruiting better. We're winning at home. Unfortunate, the biggest DJ Rodgers. Like, I don't even know how to say it. It's like not really unfortunate. Like, he fucked up. We've been able to win – get talent and I think that's different than it has been in a while.
It's a fun little team you guys have. It's not every position is strong, but you have really good coaches. Garbers is super fun. He's a if he can stay healthy guy, but he can be super fun. So I think they were like a top 10 offense with him when they
I believe somewhere in there. I think S&P Plus might have had him pretty high when Garber's actually played a full game.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm bummed. I'm bummed that that rivalry isn't happening. I'm bummed to not go to any football games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm sort of happy college football's back with a high degree of anxiety.
Kind of has you on the edge of your seat, like up until kickoff. Like, is this game actually happening? So now I'm going to have that fear now every week for any like Cal game. And I think this should also strike fear into all of Pac-12 fans. It's like 100%. Until kickoff happens, you're like, is this game happening? Is someone going to test positive like during warmups? And they're going to have to cancel everything. So
the whole Fox crew being out because of coronavirus for Big Noon Saturday or Big Saturday kickoff, whatever it's called. Yeah. Leinart and his COVID denying.
Oh boy. Oh. No.
So what are you working on? Like, what are you plugging?
Plugging the show. Yeah. Just please follow the show at Travel H Thursdays. You can find us anywhere you find podcasts. At @THT_USC on Twitter. You can follow me at Saman Jabari, SamanDjabbari on Twitter. You can follow Kenny at KennethMartin7, and then Will at Will_Robinson_. Those are the three dudes that do the show. We really appreciate it. We're loosey-goosey. We like to have fun with it. We fancy ourselves as if this weird podcast Ain't Played Nobody meets the Shutdown Fullcast. Weird marriage of USC football. We've gotten a negative review that called us a bunch of frat boys, which we are not, but it was laughed at. So yeah, if you like to just, you know, enjoy college football and listen to three dudes be stupid about it, I would recommend the show.
Well, they're a friend of ours, so you know they're good. I think that's the best way to put it. Yeah, so if that's it for the Golden Bearcast. If you're listening, you already found us, so why do I need to tell you where to find us? But you can find us on Twitter. We do have a Discord channel you can join as well. But also you can find all our written stuff at writeforcalifornia.com. We have all of the Washington previews up that is now deemed useless. But we are doing watch-along live streams on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Twitch. So look into that. Subscribe to us on YouTube and set your alerts just so you know when we go live. You can join us in the chats. We're reading that all the time and just interact with us for the watch-alongs. If I get this posted before the Washington game, we'll probably do the Oregon-Stanford game and just watch along for that. But next week we'll have the ASU game. Maybe we'll ask Saman to come on and join us for a quarter. Just to talk about the ASU, what he's seeing, and you know, we'll all facepalm together as Herm Edwards maybe calls an all-out blitz on, you know, 3rd and 40. Like, who knows what we'll see, but it's Pac-12 football, and we're all here to just enjoy it. We're here for the ride.
Marvin Lewis back at defensive coordinator in the year 2020. What's gonna go wrong or weird about that?
We're going to see Ray Maluga come out and just like be the starting linebacker.
Ejected immediately for his head.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's it. And as always, go Bears.
Go Bears.